As I said, fans of speculative fiction are converging on Perth this week. And conventions like this attract fans of all persuasions, and it's not unusual to see someone dressed up as a warrior alien from the long-running television series Star Trek, or a Klingon, rubbing shoulders with a vampire or even Xena the Warrior Princess. There are rules, though. Participants are encouraged to dress up, but the organisers stress that being nude is not a costume. But conventions like SwanCon also provide an opportunity for writers of speculative fiction to not only meet fans but also share writing tips and debate the finer points of character development and world creation. For instance, this year, issues up for discussion include the portrayal of sexuality in speculative fiction and the future of writing about the future. And there'll also be a seminar called Choose Your Own Apocalypse, looking at your favourite kind of societal collapse. So we're joined today by two authors who are going to take part. In the studio with me is Trudy Canavan, author of the Black Magician Trilogy, The Age of Five, and most recently, The Magician's Apprentice. Welcome, Trudy.
Good morning.
And joining us on the phone from Perth is Richard Morgan. He got off a flight last night from London to attend this week's conference. His latest novel, The Steel Remains, is his first foray into fantasy, but he's written science fiction books like Altered Carbon and Broken Angels. Welcome to you, Richard.
Hi there.
Well, Trudy, can we begin? For you, what are these conferences like? Paint a picture for us.
Well, they're quite varied in that you have, like you said, you have people who dress up, and quite often they'll have an event called the Masquerade where people will dress up, and I'll be judging the Masquerade along with a few other people today, this time. I think you too, Richard?
Yeah, that's right. I'm signed up for that one too.
Yep. And last year I went to my first SwanCon, and I was completely bowled over by how much effort people put into these costumes, right to the finest detail. They are really
like
just
what?
Pieces of artwork. Everything from, you know, a Klingon costume through to maybe something from Star Wars, you know, the amazing aliens they have in that, or else it could be, you know, fantasy things. Somebody's, you know, got their own interpretation of Gandalf or something like that. And a lot of TV shows, all sorts of influences, both literary and media influences. And then you have kind of a gaming stream, usually within each convention, where people will come along and they'll sit in a particular area and they'll play all these different kinds of games, you know, everything from Dungeons and Dragons through to games I haven't heard of before, but I haven't been really keeping track of the game scene. But yeah, they're really well established. And then so you've kind of, the costuming is kind of part of the media scene, the media stream, and that will also include panels where they discuss things like, you know, are Klingons, you know, tougher than aliens, you know, the aliens from the Alien show, movies. And then you have a literary stream, where, which is what I'm part of, and we can get quite in-depth about various aspects of both, you know, how certain things, like I said, the sexuality is treated within speculative fiction, or you go to the other scale where you talk about writing tips and advice and stuff like that.
Well, we're going to talk about both of those things in a moment. But, Richard, as I said, you've flown halfway around the world for an author tour of Australia. What's it like going on to along to one of these particular meetings?
Well, I think everything that Trudy said is true. The other thing for me, I think, and I imagine Trudy probably go along with this as well, is that as an author, you're kind of lonely professionally. You sit in a room and you type, and you know that's what you do. It's not a very social profession. So one of the things about going to a convention like this is you finally get some feedback from the people who are reading your books, and that's very nice because it negates the sense you sometimes have that you're shouting into the void. You know, for me, writing is an act of, or at least an attempt at an act of communication, and you got to hope someone's reading what you write. Now you kind of, you know that because your books sell, but at the same time, it's very much a silent process most of the time. Go to something like this and suddenly you've got people coming to you and saying, you know, oh, I was really interested in the way you treated this character, and why did you choose to have you know, this ending to the book and so forth. And it's the other half of a conversation that you've really been having all the time you've been writing. It's just you haven't had a chance to hear what the other half of that is.
Well, one of the,
so that's very valuable.
One of the conversations you're going to have together, actually, because you're both on this panel about sexuality and speculative fiction. So can we talk a little bit about that? Trudy, what about you? What issues do you think you'll be raising in this panel?
Well, it'll probably range from the serious to the ridiculous. And you'll start off with, you know, homosexuality. There's a lot of fantasy books that are quite well known for having great homosexual romances in them. And then you'll have gender issues as well, how, you know, male-female gender issues are tackled within the books. And fantasy books and science fiction books can range from very feminist right through to very sexist. So there's a whole huge amount of stuff to discuss there. And then you get probably silly directions you'll go off in, like I think I mentioned earlier, the whole idea of Klingon condoms. Would they work? Would they be effective? How would you get them from? Probably not going to be able to answer any of those questions, but we'll have a great fun discussing them.
So, Richard, you take quite a graphic approach to the portrayal of sex, or at least an incidental approach. And you've got some gay characters who, you know, are just as part of their lives. They sometimes go to bed with each other. What's the connection between the fantasy novel and homosexual sexuality?
Well, in my case, it was. I've just come off writing 5 science fiction novels, and there's a lot of graphic sex in most of those, but it has been pretty much all straight sex. It's just that in the context of the novel I was writing, fantasy universe, which is sort of, you can see it as analogous to a medieval society, I suppose, like a lot of fantasy. It was the need to create someone who is empowered but at the same time an outsider, and that's quite a difficult thing to do in a society where, by and large, if you step out of line, you just get your head chopped off. So the character I was writing about in this case was going to come from the noble class, but then if you're part of the noble class in a society like that, why would you be an outsider? And obviously sexuality is something that's wired in. You know, you're born with this, you're stuck with your sexual orientation. And so that gives you the opportunity to have a character who's never going to be able to belong. And for me, that was very valuable in creating this particular book. But I think the larger issue of graphic sexuality, I've never understood this kind of slightly prudish attitude that says sex should not be described. I mean, to me, sex is a part of human life, and therefore, if you're writing fiction, you're writing about human life, and I don't see why you would describe a sword fight in great detail, or you'd describe a marital argument in great detail, but you wouldn't describe a sexual coupling in great detail.
But with speculative fiction, you're not necessarily describing human beings, are you?
Oh yes.
Yes, you are. I think Trudy.
So all the aliens are human beings, really?
Yeah.
Well, the best thing about science fiction fantasy, you can explore a lot to do with the human condition under sort of the guise of, you know, something exotic or a great romp of a story. But really, there's a lot of depth in what we're doing, and that we can. I mean, I have a friend who, Glenda Lark, a writer, lives in Kuala Lumpur, and she can write about these sorts of things without offending the society she lives within, because she writes it as fantasy. If she wrote it as a straight story, she'd never get away with it.
Yeah, that's very true. I think, William Gibson, leading light of the 80s cyberpunk movement and a sort of guy who made science fiction cool back then, has said, he's on record a number of times as saying, science fiction is never really about the future, it's actually about now, but it's dressed up in the clothing of the future. And yes, as Trudy says, it gives you the opportunity to, through a fantastical scenario, to explore basically the human condition, and that human condition doesn't change, really. We're the same as we were 1,000 years ago, and in 1,000 years' time, again, we're going to be the same basic types.
But wouldn't describing a couple of aliens having sex give you a chance to think about other ways to have sex other than the human way?
If you so chose, yes. I can't
imagine what that'd be like. But I'm.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were imagining what that was.
Well, I'm asking you to imagine, because you're the one who writes in this genre.
I think that the whole point about speculative fiction is that the ballpark is totally open, and you can do whatever the hell you want. All you've got to do is be able to convince. And it's obviously much harder to convince someone if you've got a very outre concept than if you're writing about a police procedural or middle class life in North London. So. It's wide open. You can do what you want. But I do think that in most cases, most writers, what they're really doing is they're looking at their perception of the human condition, and that will be in some way transposed onto aliens or fantasy creatures like elves or whatever. You always come back to the human condition. If you were to write characters who were so alien that humans couldn't relate to them, well, your readers aren't going to relate to them either, and you're stuck with a non-starter. So I think... Yeah, I think it would be. I think it's a safe bet. Well, Trudy, I don't know if you'd agree with this. I think it's a safe bet to say that 99% of speculative fiction is actually firmly rooted in reality.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Well, on the book show here, we're talking about speculative fiction and fantasy because there's a Western Australia's annual science fiction convention on this week, SwanCon, and Richard Morgan's with me, and so is Trudy Canavan. Now, both of you will also be running workshops on how to write in your genres. How do you take a fan-based audience, Trudy, through the mechanics of writing?
I think there are some inalienable rules that you have to assume your audience already knows, the usual things like show, don't tell, things like that. And then for me, when it comes to things like how to get published, that side of tips and techniques, I tend to avoid that now because it's been so long since I actually sought a publisher and was, you know, in the marketplace that I don't think I can actually give accurate advice anymore. So it tends to be more things to do with, very specifically with writing fantasy. And I have one rule that I love, which is, unless you've got a great reason for it, stick to the laws of physics. If you don't stick to the laws of physics, make sure you've got a fantasy explanation for it. And I kind of fell in this hole with my second series where I had a pair of twins that were conjoined twins that magically separated and then they were different genders. I completely did not do my research and realised that they had to be of the same gender if they were conjoined twins. So then I had to have a fantasy explanation for why they were of different genders.
So who picked that up?
Jennifer Fallon, another Australian writer. She's on the phone saying to me, I think you're going to have trouble with this.
So she saw this manuscript.
Yes, yes.
Very wise to send it around like that.
Oh, it's always
like
a good idea to send your manuscript
out to
people.
Can't you just say it's magic? This is fantasy?
Well, no,
it's magic?
I did come up with a fantasy explanation for it, but you can't just leave it unexplained. You have to make sure people know that if it's not obeying the laws of physics, that there is a fantasy explanation for it. And the third one is, if you have a fantasy explanation, be very careful about trying to explain it as the laws of physics, because sometimes it doesn't work. And I've read things where there's been, say, flying horses, where the author thought, I think I better boost that by giving them anti-gravity horseshoes. Now, why wouldn't they just float upside down? I don't know. So I think you have to be very careful about trying to explain something that's a fantasy concept with science.
What about you, Richard? What are you talking about in your session on sci-fi?
I'm going to part company slightly with Trudy on this one. I'm a bit of an iconoclast when it comes to this. I think the whole point is that as writers of fiction, what we're doing really is we're conjurers. We're creating an illusion. We're making people believe something's real when it very clearly isn't. And the trick to that is to basically put enough conviction into your writing that the reader does not notice or doesn't want to notice that it doesn't make sense. And I think the truth of the matter is that all fantasy or science fictional universes eventually break down under scrutiny, but so do all fictional universes. I mean, I had an argument about this a little while ago where I was saying that, you know, police procedurals, which have a reputation for being very hard-boiled genre and very sort of close to reality. But the truth is, if you talk to, a homicide detective anywhere in the world, in their entire career, they're probably going to have maybe two or three cases that are really sort of, you know, worthy of a novel. But the characters that are written in this genre, you know, there are 15 books. So, you know, every year they're having this, you know, stunning serial killer hunt.
So and what is it with Midsommar? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, exactly.
So many murders in Midsommar.
But the reader knows this, and the reader just suspends disbelief because they want to, because they're buying into the fiction. And
except, Richard, your readers are very finicky. Now, I know two people who I know very well are readers of speculative fiction, and they are very particular and very well versed in the laws of physics and sort of the genre. And they, I imagine they would be very unforgiving readers.
That's why I'm too scared to write science fiction.
Well, there is a mindset within the genre which is very keen on sort of disproving the possibilities in a given book. But again, I think this kind of flies in the face of what we're about, because you either buy into it or you don't. Most science fiction, you can sit down and within about 10 minutes you can pull apart what it's made of. And that includes the greats. I mean, that includes, you know, Ray Bradbury, it includes William Gibson, who I was saying, leading light, and certainly my favourite science fiction author ever. What happens is that within the heart, what's called the hard SF community, is there's a kind of snobbery built around this idea that, oh, you know, it has to make sense. And a lot of these people do work in you know, physics or chemistry or whatever, and so they do have the knowledge. But again, that's not really the issue. You know, to me, I mean, take an author who I'm very fond of, who no one outside of genre circles would have heard of, a guy called Paul Anderson, Danish-American writer from the Golden Age, from the 50s and 60s. Now, a lot of his stuff is built around the idea of galactic empires and a faster-than-light space drive that enables... Essentially, what he's done is take the Roman Empire and map it onto a galactic template, and the idea is that the spaceships can travel between solar systems in a matter of sort of days or weeks, depending on the distance. Now, there's no basis in reality for the physics behind that at all, but the point is it doesn't matter because it works as a fictional concept and you buy into it because the fiction is good, not because the science. sense is good. And you can throw in sort of pseudoscientific terminology to as sort of dust in the eyes, as it were. But the truth of the matter is, if you want a faster-than-light drive in your fiction, and a lot of science fiction has it, then you just put it in and you say, look, it works. I don't care. If you don't want to play this game, then, you know, don't read the book.
Go and read another book then, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Precisely.
Richard Morgan, thank you so much for talking to us this morning. You and Trudy Canavan are going to be at SwanCon, the science fiction convention running this week in Perth, starting on Thursday. Sounds like you're going to have an awful a lot of good fun and very interesting conversations.
I certainly hope so. I'll see you there, Trudy.
I'll see you in a few days.
All right. Well, you're listening to ABC Radio National with me, Ramona Koval.